This is Uprising. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. Autism affects 1 in 88 U.S. children, according to data released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention just yesterday. That number is up 25% from the CDC's previous estimate in 2002 of 1 in 110 children developing the disorder. According to the CDC, boys are 5 times more likely than girls to be afflicted with autism, and children with IQs above 85 are increasingly being diagnosed with it. Only 1 in 10,000 children were diagnosed with autism as recently as the early 1990s. The steadily climbing rate of the disorder has parents and public officials worried about what is causing autism, but the CDC says it cannot pinpoint a cause. The definition of autism has expanded to include a range of behavioral disorders that fall along an autism spectrum, including Asperger's syndrome. In Utah, the CDC found that 1 in 47 children were diagnosed with a disorder falling on the autism spectrum, while in Alabama, the rate was much lower at 1 in 120 kids. Zachary Warren of an autism treatment and research facility at Vanderbilt University told the AP yesterday that significant disparities in rates between states may be explained by access to the health records of children in each area. The cause of autism disorders is up for debate, with some arguing that genetics plays a major role, while others controversially blame childhood vaccines. But award-winning journalist and E! Magazine editor Britta Belli has now detailed the links between environmental toxins and autism in a new book called The Autism Puzzle, Connecting the Dots Between Environmental Toxins and Rising Autism Rates. In it, Belli interprets compelling evidence that everyday exposure to environmental toxins, such as flame retardants used in furniture and electronics, are linked to rising autism rates. Those same chemicals are banned in other countries. Britta Belli's blog about autism can be found online at autismandtoxins.com. She now joins me on the phone. Welcome to Uprising, Britta Belli.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. What do you, first of all, make of these new numbers from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention? The CDC just released numbers showing that autism and related disorders have risen sharply in the U.S. Their previous estimate was 1 in 110. Now it's 1 in 88 children.
To me, this isn't surprising. I mean, the numbers for autism have been on a steady climb. And in recent decades, and, you know, may in fact even be higher than we're seeing now. And these figures are actually from 2008 that they're releasing now. And there was actually a study done last year in a community in South Korea where they screened every single child between the ages of 7 and 12 and found that the numbers were 1 in 38 children who fit the diagnosis of autism. So, and they're saying, you know, researchers have said there's no reason why this community would be any different than anywhere else. But certainly the numbers just continue to be on the rise, and it's really quite disturbing.
What is the consensus, or is there any consensus, of the causes of autism? In your book, you point out that genetics certainly can't explain the fact that autism diagnoses are increasing so rapidly.
Right, and it's only now, though, for whatever reason, I mean, the focus has been almost exclusively on looking for genetic answers to autism rates. But in recent years, there's been much more study devoted to the role that played by toxins and chemicals in our environment and how those might be contributing in addition to genetics. So people having a genetic susceptibility that's being exploited by exposure to chemicals while, you know, children are in utero. And these chemicals, I mean, are kind of far and wide across our environments. They're in our homes, they're in our products, they're in our food supply. So that's been one of the difficulties in this kind of research, is teasing apart all these different exposures and connecting them directly to autism.
Yet you say in your book that the idea that a toxin can cause autism is neither controversial nor speculative. So then why has there been not as much research, perhaps, as people would like, on the environmental causes, on the fact that toxins that we know cause autism are contributing to these very high rates that we see?
You know, I mean, even the researchers I spoke to about, I mean, with that particular question, like, why hasn't this been more of a focus? really didn't have a great answer other than to say certain studies get funded and others don't, you know, and
right.
and researchers go where the funding dollars are. So that's really, I mean, that's basically the answer. There just hasn't been a lot of money behind behind studies looking at environmental causes until more recently. You know, of course, there's been a lot of distraction with all the vaccination issue and that controversy. So that's, I think, taken up a lot of people's attention.
And where do you fall on that issue?
I mean, really, that to me is not even an issue at this point. You know, the only concern there really had to do with the preservative thimerosal in vaccinations, which contains mercury and which was removed from childhood vaccines in 2001. So it's not really, and nor has anything conclusive ever been found connecting vaccines to autism. So to me, it's really time to move on from that. And I absolutely think mercury is of great concern, and it's something that I address a lot in the book, but not mercury from that source, but from really from coal-burning power plants, from our fish supply in particular.
Well, let's talk about that, because you have a chapter in your book that is entitled Foreign Bodies, How We All Became Carriers of Mercury, Triclosan, and Flame Retardants. Just recently on our program, we had covered a new study showing that low doses of chemical exposure have been found to have severe health effects as per a survey of 800 studies done. It seems as though we are awash in chemicals that cause harm. Why do you point out these three chemicals in particular when you're talking about autism?
Well, you know, in each case, I mean, I'm trying to break down sort of various chemicals of concern, and mercury comes up a lot in discussions of autism because the symptoms of mercury poisoning seems to almost look like a severe case of autism. There's the agitation, seizures, involuntary, you know, flapping and motions, and withdrawal anxiety. There's a lot of overlap. So there's kind of a natural inclination to say, okay, well, there's some similarities here. What's going on? And mercury is also very pervasive in our environment and in our bloodstreams. So, I mean, the EPA in 2000 looked at like 500 sampling sites to study the nation's fish, and they found mercury in every single fish that they studied. And we also know that there have been studies connecting environmentally released mercury from power plants in Texas to rates of autism. So there's definitely something going on. We know that the exposure has really increased over the years, and it's a subject of great concern because it's a toxic heavy metal that directly impacts the developing brain, similar to lead exposure, which is something that we've perhaps given more attention to and taken greater steps to regulate.
Now, I understand that your book is the first to address the evidence that environmental exposures to toxins of people who are genetically susceptible can impact brain development in children and can lead to autism. Why is there so, again, I keep coming back to this question, why is this not a more obvious question? I mean, because there are armies of parents out there with children who are struggling with this disorder, is there grassroots pressure to bring up this issue of toxins?
There definitely are organizations that are pushing to regulate chemicals in the U.S. and to really overhaul our chemical regulation. Not so much of it directly because of autism, but looking at a whole host of childhood disorders and diseases that are on the rise, whether we're talking about asthma, allergies, various sensitivities, childhood cancers, so many things, reproductive issues, early puberty, you know, many of these issues have been tied to chemical exposures and the increase in chemical exposures in recent years. So the movement, I think, is broader than just the autism discussion, but it's gaining momentum, and the legislation that has been proposed is the Safe Chemicals Act, and there are many groups that are backing this and trying to push this forward, but there just does not seem to be the political willpower to really talk about this on, you know, in the legislative sense, in the political arena. It's really been put on the back burner.
You bring up the issue of race and autism rates in your book. It has been noted that autism diagnoses are far more common among white and wealthy families. But does that mean that there are lower rates of autism in minority populations, where one also finds more often cases of environmental racism, where poor and communities of color tend to live in areas that are far more polluted?
I thought this was a very important topic to bring up, because the face of autism is overwhelmingly white, and there has been this sort of notion that this is a, sort of a white problem. The fact is, among lower-income communities and Hispanic and Black communities in particular, autism rates are on a steady climb, and there isn't, because we don't have the universal screening for autism, there's a problem really lies with diagnosis. And so there's parents who are maybe not knowing that these are the signs, not bringing their kids to be tested, or they're being diagnosed late, or in many cases misdiagnosed. And one of the things I brought up in the book was there were studies done that the length of time a family had been on Medicaid actually impacted whether or not they received an autism diagnosis. So if they'd been on it for more than a year, they were less likely to receive an autism diagnosis. So there's really, until there's universal screening for autism, which was something that a topic that had been raised with this recent CDC report, why aren't we screening every child for autism beginning at 18 months? You know, what I mean, that would really give us accurate answers in terms of who really has this disorder and how prevalent it really is.
Right. I mean, we screen children for other things. They are given vaccines for diseases that strike probably in fewer numbers than autism, with 1 in 83 American children now being diagnosed with autism or related disorders. That's a huge number. I'm speaking with E! Magazine editor and award-winning journalist Britta Belli about her new book, The Autism Puzzle, Connecting the Dots Between Environmental Toxins and Rising Autism Rates. What about the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which released these statistics? Is this a government agency that ought to be actually trying to prevent? Isn't it supposed to be trying to prevent a disease like autism? What role does it play in bringing to light or not the relationship between toxins and autism?
Well, I mean, the CDC's role, and I think a lot of these national agencies' roles, are really they're tracking, they're doing the screenings, they are doing, you know, a lot of the data that I use in the book comes from these agencies, because they do the studies of, you know, take 1,000 people across the U.S., and take blood samples, urine samples, and they track how our chemical exposures have gone up over the years and that sort of thing. So they're kind of doing the broader work of tracking and monitoring our exposure levels and, you know, rates of disease like this, like autism. But, you know, in terms of the prevention role, I mean, that really comes down to our chemical regulation. And right now, we are still operating with a 1976 law called the Toxic Substances Control Act, which grandfathered in 61,000 chemicals, which means it's basically left the government kind of helpless to do anything to regulate these chemicals, even when they've found, as with, you know, bisphenol A has gotten a lot of attention lately, that these are harmful, and the federal government is admitting that they are harmful. But because of this outdated chemical regulation, we're basically helpless to do anything about it. And that's the situation we find ourselves in now, where we are armed with the knowledge that these chemicals are harming us, are particularly posing a harm to children and to pregnant women, and yet not able to really do anything about it unless we really overhaul this legislation altogether and we kind of start fresh and say every chemical has to meet certain safety standards, has to prove that they're safe for, you know, for women, for unborn children, for the most vulnerable members of society, And if they're not, if they're proven that they're not safe, then we need to find safer alternatives.
Now, Britta, I'm glad you brought up the issue of bisphenol A because we talked about mercury from coal-burning plants but also there's, of course, the issue of plastics that are everywhere. And you have a chapter in your book about plastics and pesticides. What sort of evidence is there linking these chemicals found in plastics and pesticides, to autism?
Well, in the case of plastics, one of the earliest studies connecting it to autism was kind of found by accident. And there was a researcher who was doing work in Sweden, and they had a very detailed questionnaire, and they discovered, and so they looked at these children there and everything about their home environments, and they found that there was a real correlation between children who later developed autism and those who had been, whose parents' bedrooms had vinyl flooring, and also where the homes had poor ventilation. And what they connected this to was phthalates, which are softeners, plastic softeners, that would have been in that vinyl flooring, and because of the poor ventilation, circulating more inside the home, and so would have been inhaled, can be present in the household dust, for instance. Phthalates and bisphenol A are both found in a range of plastic products, and they're both hormone-disrupting, endocrine-disrupting chemicals. That, you know, they're in child toys, they're in bath toys, they're in all sorts of plastic tubing and food containers, and in the case of BPA, also the lining of canned food. And these, like a lot of other endocrine-disrupting chemicals in our environment, basically confuse the developing brain. So they're mimicking hormones and changing the way that brains develop, and it doesn't take a large amount of these chemicals to cause serious changes. And they're beginning to be directly linked to autism, but once again, we're sort of at the initial stages of those studies.
Finally, Britta Belli, you are about to have your own child, and I'm sure there's lots of parents listening, either of very young children or women who are about to, and parents who are about to have children. How did you approach, given how much you know, having to write this book and doing all the research, how do you keep yourself from being paranoid and freaked out?
It has been interesting. It's impossible to put this stuff out of your mind, and I think it's also, you know, dealing with the kind of futility of you make efforts, you know, to restrict, you know, you don't heat things in plastic, for instance. You don't you try to avoid eating tuna fish because it's going to contain mercury and that's not safe, and you take steps to avoid certain exposures. I'm not touching my dog after he's gotten his flea treatment, that sort of thing. But it's, you realize that so much of this is really out of your control, and I think that's really the frightening thing, that so many of the parents that I spoke to also have had to deal with, is almost a sense of, well, what did I do? What should I have done? And it's almost impossible to know that without some sort of comprehensive reform, we are somewhat in the dark, and we are, you know, kind of winging it when it comes to trying to avoid chemicals, and it's an imperfect process.
And it's frightening because your child's life is at stake. Well, finally, do you recommend the Safe Chemicals Act as one place for people who want to take political action to get started?
Yes, and there's various groups that are promoting that, Environmental Working Group, Safer Chemicals, Healthy Families, Healthy Child, Healthy World. So there's several organizations that you can go to their websites, learn more, learn steps to, say, avoiding BPA in your diet. Environmental Working Group is great for that, and also for, their cosmetic database. So, you want to look up your sunscreen, your child's baby lotion, that kind of thing. How safe is it? There are resources out there.
Well, Britta Belli, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Good luck with your book. Good luck with giving birth.
Thank you very much.
Britta Belli is the editor of E! Magazine and an award-winning journalist. We've been discussing her book, The Autism Puzzle, Connecting the Dots Between Environmental Toxins and Rising Autism Rates. Her blog about autism can be found online at autismandtoxins.com.